Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Okay, joining me now on a very special roundtable end-of-decade Arsecast to discuss all things Arsenal over the last 10 years and at the moment, very briefly, our good player, hello.
Hello.
Gilberto Silva from Gunnerblog.com.
Hi there.
And the man from East Lower.
Happy New Year.
And to you. Let's start very quickly, if I can, man from East Lower, with you. After the Chelsea game, we'll touch very briefly on what's going on at the moment. After the Chelsea game, we were 11 points behind them. Everyone had written us off. December has been exceptionally good for us, both in terms of our form and what the teams around us have done.
Yeah, when we lost 3-0 and Wenger came out and said that he thought Chelsea would drop points and that we were still in with the chance, I thought he'd absolutely lost his marbles. But it's amazing. We are right bang up there now. And who would have seen it? Nobody would have seen it. We've had a brilliant December so far.
Gilberto Silva, the loss of Cesc might at another time have been really, really difficult. With players like Diaby looking like they're showing the kind of form we've expected or hoped from them over the last couple of seasons, maybe we can cope without him for the next few weeks.
Yeah, hopefully. If he can get back in time for the run of fixtures that's at the end of January towards the beginning of February, where we face like the likes of Villa, United, Chelsea and Liverpool all, you know, within a few days of each other, then I think we might be all right for the first part of January. Diaby's playing very well. It depends really on how bad Danielson's injury turns out to be. If we were to lose Danielson, Cesc and Song for a prolonged period of time, that might be more of a concern.
Hmm. Good player. I think you have to give credit to the team, having been in a position where they're 11 points behind, where everybody practically is saying, well, that's it, it's game over now. To have gone through December the way we did, I think it shows a great deal of mental strength and shows that there's a determination to achieve something this year with this group of players.
Yeah, no, I agree entirely. I remember talking to the man from East Lower just after the Chelsea defeat. And I think we were saying to each other that we couldn't. There'd been too much good early on in this season for us to believe it was just a complete repeat of last season. And I think the players have kind of latched onto that and really shown that. And I think what I tried to say on my blog this week was that whilst Fabregas definitely made the difference when he came on, it was a pretty good performance up until then, and we'd certainly cranked it up after half time. And you know, we're pretty good at exploiting teams as they tire a little bit, and I think it was everyone was playing well, and I think that's important.
All right, okay, well, fingers crossed we can keep it up against Portsmouth. Now, it's 10 years of the noughties or the 2000s or whatever you want to call them, and it's a decade that started incredibly well. You could almost split it in two in the sense that the first 5 years involved trophies, incredible achievements, incredible football. There was a double, the Invincible season, FA Cups, etc. And since 2005, we've struggled a little bit, but there are factors, obviously, in terms of moving stadium and trying to keep up with financial difficulties and all that kind of stuff. But what I want to do first is talk about your teams of the decade. And we've all sat down probably in the last 10 minutes and written out the the team that we think is the best Arsenal team of the decade. And I've had to do it from the point of I've had to leave aside some personal animus I've got with certain players to realistically think what is the best Arsenal 11 of all the players that have played over the last 10 years. I'm not sure. Maybe we should do it position by position. I think they're probably going to be quite similar. In goal, obviously, I've got Jens Lehmann.
Yeah, I've got Jens Lehmann as well. In fairness, David Seaman won as many league titles this decade as Jens Lehmann did. But I thought Jens Lehmann came in his first season to not lose a single game, I think is a fairly incredible feat for a goalkeeper. So I went for Jens too.
Mm. Yeah, I went for Jens Lehmann as well. I thought I couldn't give it the sympathy vote to Seaman. He was sort of on the wane. And so Lehman for me.
Yeah, I've got Lehman as well. I do think, I imagine a few of that Invincibles team will be cropping up in these selections. But for a goalkeeper to go pretty much the season unbeaten, I think he played every league game in that season. But throughout his time with us until the very end, he was an excellent goalkeeper towards the end of his career, but a remarkable keeper nonetheless. And I think better than anything we've had since.
Yeah, I think that kind of goes without saying. All right, right back. Maybe we might diversify a little bit here, but I've gone for Sanya because I think he is probably the perfect Wenger fullback in the sense that he defends well, he's strong, he's quick, he's athletic, and while I really like Lauren and the hardness that he brought to the team, and I thought he was a good player, certainly perhaps more of an attacking threat than Sanya. I've gone for Sanya because I just think, you know, if I have to balance it across the rest of the defence, he's the guy that's that can really do it for me. Gilberto Silva?
I've actually gone for Sanya as well. I thought very strongly about picking Lauren, who was a player I really liked, and obviously who played for us over a much longer spell over the decade. But I do think Sanya's just a phenomenal right back. I really do. I've thought that since day one. He's incredibly powerful, incredibly athletic, and I remember when we had that Invincibles team, Lauren was always talked about as sort of a possible weak link, perhaps unfairly, but I think Sanya is actually head and shoulders above him as a player and as a defender. I think he's top class.
I'm actually going to go with Lauren. Not because I think he's a better player particularly than Sanya. I think Sanya's, I agree with you all, I think he's a really, really good right back. But I think in terms of what he won and the sort of team he played in and what that meant, and the fact he moved from midfield to sort of right back, I think in his peak he was excellent. So I think, you know, obviously Sanya could have done it, but I'm going to go for Lauren.
I think finally I'd go for Sanya very easily. I think it was purely timing and circumstance, the fact that Lauren was, 7 years older than Sanya. Had Sanya been born at the same time as Lauren or vice versa, you know, I think Sanya would have been ahead of Lauren in the team, and I think Sanya would have been a great player for the Invincibles, won all those trophies. You look at Sanya, there's a great montage that they play when the teams come out, when they're doing the Sinatra song just before, or the Elvis song just before they come out at the Emirates, and they play a montage on the video screens, and one of the things, they play loads of goals, and one of the things they play is that tackle at Stamford Bridge where Terry came in and absolutely clattered Sanya, put quite a nasty, dirty foul actually. You just see Sanya just getting up and not even looking at Terry, not even giving him that much. And I just think he would have been a great player, and he would have graced any of our teams, and I think I'd go for him.
All right. Okay. Let's do the central defence as a pairing. Man from East Lower, could you start that one, please?
Yeah, sure. I had a bit of a problem with this one. I probably should have gone for Torre, but I didn't. In the end, I went for Campbell and Keown. Campbell, because I think he, you know, the fact we nabbed him off Spurs was fantastic, and he was superb for the first, for the first three years or so. I thought he was excellent. Keown, just because he's sort of linked to the old school, and if alone for what he did to Nat Van Nistelrooy at Old Trafford. I think he's just a legend of mine, so I take those two.
Yeah, I've got the exact same two as well. I thought Campbell, you know, in his first three seasons for us, was an incredible player, particularly in that Invincible season. I struggled a bit with Touré because I like Colo, but I just thought if you had to pick two defenders to really make a solid back four, it would be Campbell, and Martin Keown was the other one as well. Like you say, it's old school, that hardness, that commitment, the drive, you know, the physicality maybe that we've missed in recent seasons. Campbell and Keown for me, you know, at their peak would be an awesome pairing.
Yeah.
I'd say the same. I think Campbell, you can't look beyond it. He made a huge difference when he came in 2001, won two league titles for us. I think most of us will agree on that. Keown versus Touré, that's what it came down for me. I looked and I thought, well, in 2001, 2002, and the year after when we won the FA Cup, our second defender was Keown. I know Adams was at the tail end of his career when we won the title in 2002, and I think Adams and Keown were still there when we were turned invincible, and, you know, he didn't play many games that season, but he did clatter Van Nistelrooy. And I don't think you can, I think you have to look at the that old back four. I think there has to be some kind of a nod to them in this team, because I think they were around at the turn of the decade, and the kind of values they instilled in players like Vieira, etc., I think were crucial to some of the success we've enjoyed. And you can look at, you know, the fact we haven't enjoyed so much success since they've gone, and maybe have a look at that. So I'd go for Campbell and Chianti.
I'm the odd one out here. I've gone for Touré alongside Campbell. I thought very, very hard about putting Keown in, who's a player I really loved and who is a superior defender for me for Touré. But I went for Kolo because certainly in the first part of his time at Arsenal, the spirit that he showed on the pitch was something that was really typified that invincible side, and that sort of amazing energy that he brought to his game. And I have a lot of affection for Touré, and I think it's quite sad the way that he declined, and I think it's probably for the best that he eventually left the club. But for his part in the sort of mid period of the decade, I've gone for Kolo Touré alongside Sol Campbell.
All right, left back. And I think everybody's got that little rueful laugh because it's you've got to look at it from a purely footballing point of view, which is the way I picked my team. Who are the best footballers, and leaving aside...
Can we not just move on? No, I'm kidding.
But yeah, for me it had to be Ashley Cole, and perhaps one of the downsides, the biggest downsides of this decade, was the way in which Cole left the club and became public enemy number one. You know, for a guy that grew up with us, that, you know, started his career at Arsenal. He got a lucky break, perhaps, when Silvino left. But, you know, he was an Arsenal boy through and through. And I think it's, you know, with the distance of time, it's a bit of a shame the way his time at the club ended. From a footballing point of view, for me, he's certainly the best left-back we've had in the last 10 years.
Yeah, I agree. He's also, I think, he, you know, the fact that he came through the ranks from a schoolboy and his English, I think he was excellent, and it's a shame what happened. But, you know, I'd have crashed my car if I'd have been offered only 55k a week.
Only, yeah.
Right. He's a fantastic defender, though, whatever you think of him.
Well, I didn't have any such problems with this because, you know, you're talking about a team of a decade. And it depends, you know, when this team are playing. And the team I picked were 1-0 down at the Emirates with 20 minutes left, you know, in a cup competition. Wenger was throwing on the artillery, and what did he decide to do? He decided he was going to sacrifice a fullback and bring on an extra forward. And so I haven't got a left-back, so it's very, very easy, really. If I did have a left back, it would probably be Ashley Cole, I admit.
All right, so you're playing three at the back, are you?
Yeah. You know, it's like against Hull last season in the FA Cup when he just throws on striker after striker after striker. And in a way, I think that's a fitting tribute to Wenger's policy, because that's what he does. But if I'm going to have a left back, it'll be Cole. But I kind of found an extra player to go up in the air.
All right, okay.
Up in the midfield, striker area.
Gilberto Silva?
I've gone for Nelson Vivas. it pains me, but I would have to... I'd have to say Cole in seriousness. I do think for a time with us, he was phenomenal. And, you know, he's a great defender, actually, Cole. You look at him and you see this sort of quick, nippy player and you think, well, he's going to be such a threat going forward. But he's actually a really... solid defender. I think the bit of time he spent with the likes of Keown really paid off for him, and he's got very good defensive instincts. And it's sort of making me feel a bit sick, but Ashley Cole is our best left back of the decade.
The thing is, as well, if you look at Vivas, you know, I mean, I think all of us were thinking about him, but I don't think he was ever the same player after that game at Leeds, and that was kind of May 1999. So I think his best, you know, if we were talking about, you know, team of the last 12 years, I think you'd happily put Vivas in there. But you know, I think we have to be fair here. And,
first man you'd want on the bench because his utility ability.
Mm. And of course, you know, he's quite good at punching people called Neville. which I always enjoyed that about him. All right, well, there's our left back, and as painful as it might be, it's actually called for most of us, and good players taking the easy way out by playing three at the back. All right, in midfield, I've gone with three. I've gone with a three-man midfield. I've kind of taken our current formation a little bit, and in my midfield three, I've got Gilberto in the Song role, and I've got Vieira and Cesc ahead of him.
I've got exactly that as well.
Yeah, because I just think, you know, I think that this formation quite suits the way we play, and maybe it's something he should have done a couple of seasons earlier, was look at the formation to try and fit around the players that he had. But Gilberto, obviously, because he was an underrated player. He had difficulties, I thought, at times with imposing himself on games, and he allowed himself to be bullied physically, I think, at times. But when he did it, you know, there was nobody better at sort of sweeping off in front of that back four, and then ahead of him, what can you say about Fabregas and Vieira as a front two in a midfield? They're just two incredible talents. So, your particular reasons for that, Gilberto Silva?
Well, Fabregas, if you were going to pick a 4-4-2, Fabregas and Vieira would be your pick, I think, every time. I mean, they play together, for a brief spell, but not for too long. But they're outstanding for both, for two different reasons. Two number fours, two captains, two players that have been the heartbeat of, you know, the two major sides across this decade. But I felt I wanted to sneak Gilberto in, so I went with a central three because, for me, he was a player who bridged the major sort of divide in the decade. You know, when the Invincibles sort of broke up and we moved stadium, he was quite an important mainstay of that team. And there was that season where he was captain for a long time. And I felt that was a very important time for the club because we could have very easily slipped out of the Champions League. But he was a real leader in that spell and helped keep us sort of consistent pushing on through towards the end of the decade. So that's why I went for those three.
I have to say, I think, on reflection, we probably could have kept him another season, I think.
Yeah, you know, I agree.
But that's neither here nor there. Okay, good player. Let's hear your midfield.
Yeah. I could have very easily gone with those three. I mean, I think Fabregas and Vieira picked themselves. Interesting, a couple of points on that. Wenger said that Fabregas, he said somewhere, I remember reading, that Fabregas and Vieira couldn't play together, and he realised that, and that's why it's sell Vieira. I mean, I struggle to believe they couldn't have played together. I think it would have been quite fantastic. I mean, I remember going to the, I don't know if any of you remember, the 49th game of a 49-game run, the Villa home game. And it was Fabregas and Vieira in the middle with Reyes right, Pires left, Berg coming on the up front. And oh my God, I mean, it was, you know, people, we were just sitting there looking at each other. People had been going for years, a lot longer than me, just looking at each other going, it does not get any better than this. And if you, you know, there were chances of, have you ever seen football played like this? I think Gordon Strachan was kind of falling over himself in the commentary box, even at 1-1. And so this argument they couldn't have played together, I think they could have been quite magnificent. And my other point is that if we're still here in 10 years' time doing this, we could well have, if he stayed, Fabregas would only be 32. So it's quite a tribute. It's quite a tribute to him that he's, you know, it's such an obvious choice and such a dominant figure in this decade. So I'd go for those two, and then you could have gone for Gilberto Silva. I personally went for Ray Parlour. It was a very tight call. Yeah, he was there. He won both the league titles. He won quite a few of the FA Cups. And I just think he was someone who achieved so much with what he had. With a real Arsenal man, gave us a lot of steel. On another day, I'd have gone for Gilberto.
All right, so you've gone with that three as well. So Parlour as that anchor man or the engine room in midfield.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, right. All Vieira playing the Song role, if you like, and yeah. Fabregas and Parlour ahead of him.
Okay, a man from East Lower.
Well, I can't believe that none of you have picked Robert Pires.
Not yet.
Not yet.
Well, certainly not in the midfield. Well, I've gone for a traditional 4-4-2. I've got Fabregas and Vieira in the middle. I don't really need to explain why. I think we've been through that. Pires on the left, I think he's just a legend with a magnificent eye for a pass. Fabulous player. And I went... It was between Parlour and Ljungberg on the right, and I went for Freddie Ljungberg for his form sort of 2002-03, right about that time, just brilliant player. So that's who I've gone with.
All right. Honourable mentions, I suppose, you could put in there. I always liked Edu as a player, I thought he was a guy who could have achieved an awful lot more at Arsenal. Maybe his injury slowed him down, but I thought that Invincible season he was really outstanding.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was excellent. And then another one we let go, I think, a bit too soon.
Mm. All right, okay. Okay, man from East Lower, you can start because you've only got two up front as you've done the 4-4-2. Tell us who it is.
Well, I mean, I don't think you, if I were to ask you all to guess, I think you'd have it in it was Henry, obviously, and Bergkamp. I just can't choose anybody else. I'd love to have put Van Persie in because he's a player I really like and he's one of our modern players because, you know, if I look back at my 11, there's only one from the current team and yet Sanya, Arshavin, Van Persie, they could have got in. But no, I couldn't choose anyone but Henry and Bergkamp.
All right. I have a sneaking feeling then that myself and Gilberto Silva and good player have the same front three, Bergkamp, Henry and Pires. I think that's as good as it gets for me. I don't know quite how to extol the virtues of each player because we all know what they did and what they brought to the team. And I think we have to maybe look back now and think how lucky we were to be watching Arsenal at a time when we had Bergkamp, Henry, Pires, Vieira, possibly four of the best players in the world at any one time in our team. It's no wonder we play good football.
I agree. I mean, we look at, you say the decade split into two, and it is, and you know, obviously the second half it's been a bit disappointing, but it hasn't been an absolute abomination. We haven't won what we'd like to. We've still been in the Champions League every season, but it's a disappointment compared to what was just the most amazing team. And I go with you guys. I've got one extra player, remember, lucky me, up my sleeve. I kind of had on my front three. I've got Ljungberg, Pires, kind of right and left. I think if you look at Freddie, he struggled initially for about his first 18 months, which was actually from about September 1998 up until the kind of turn of the decade, if you like. And from then on, you know, he had some outstanding times that really encompassed some of our best times. So I wanted to find a place for him. Pires just speaks for himself, just brilliant. Henry and then Bergkamp as well. You know, I guess Bergkamp had come on as a sub, or one of them, Freddie had come on as a sub. I don't know, you know, however you wish, but I've managed to make room for all of them and no room for Ashley Cole, so that's a good one.
3-3-4.
We're going for it like Wenger does. And I think if Arsene was listening, and he's made a better thing to do with his time, but I think he'd appreciate the nod towards the always attacking instincts. So yeah, Henry, Bergkamp, Pires and Ljungberg.
Hey, that's not fair.
Oh well.
That's good. I've got to give honourable mention to Freddie Ljungberg, who just misses out on my team.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, you know, a cult hero, but a great player and some remarkable scoring form that won us trophies, you know. Like a legend, Freddie, doubtless, and definitely on my subs bench, I suppose. But yeah, like Blogger, I've gone for Pires, Henry and Bergkamp. I haven't quite worked out the sort of iteration of where those three will be. I think I would just let them do whatever they like, really. But just go. It's fine. We've got Gilberto.
Well, I think Pires personally goes better and bit further back rather than the front three, just because the amount of balls he used to ping through to Henri. So I don't know, but at least we've all got him.
yeah. Couldn't be a team without.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. United Healthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, United Healthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com. Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Without Robert Pires, you'd have to think that team were it together at the peak of its powers, would be pretty much unstoppable. But then how do we explain the difference between, you know, that team with those great players and their struggles in Europe with a team, you know, that's done better in Europe over the last couple of seasons, but is certainly much more raw in terms of experience and possibly not as talented? It's weird, isn't it?
Well, you know who's got the experience now. It's Arsene Wenger. I think that's a really crucial thing. And I think he's learned a hell of a lot over the last 14 years of Champions League competition. He's learned to be a lot cleverer. I know he had a bit of experience beforehand. He's learned how to manage it with an English team, which I think is important. And if you look as well, that some of our players who we've brought in, players like Adebayo, etc., have had previous Champions League experience, whereas a lot of the English guys, great players as they were, didn't have that experience other than a couple of games against Austria Vienna in 1991. So I don't know, but I suspect my hunch is that Wenger's learned a lot, to be honest.
I think as well, the context of European football has changed somewhat. I think an English team, a Premier League team, say, coming up against a Serie A team a decade ago and now, is probably a slightly different proposition. Like, I feel that the strength of our league is so significant, really, in the way that the teams progress, and that I think that the other teams around us, I think this Arsenal team is not as good as the Invincibles team, but the gap between it is not as vast as some would have you believe. I just genuinely believe the other big teams in England, the amount of money that they spend now, the sort of the outlay that's there, the players that are brought in, I do believe the general standard of the competition has raised.
All right.
I'm not sure. I mean, I think a lot of the current team is down to experience. If you look at the 2004 side, there's so much experience there, and it's very hard to say whether the current team will ever be as good as that, because, you know, if we kept them together another 3 or 4 years, then you might be able to judge, but it's pretty hard to say at the moment.
Well, I mean, the thing about that team where we talked about those players, but they're all pretty much at their peak, you know, the very height of their talent and ability. But anyway, that's neither here nor there. Thank you for your teams of the decade. And we move on to some other little snippets that we look back on over the last 10 years. The game of the decade was one which caused me to think, and I don't particularly like thinking very much, especially not after all the beer at Christmas, but there were games that entertained, but there were games that just gave you that lift as a fan afterwards for days, for weeks even. And the game I've gone for, there were a few I'll come back to, just I won't mention, just in case somebody else has chosen this as their game of the decade, but the one that just sticks in my mind straight away is winning the league at Old Trafford that night. I thought that really, I don't quite know how to explain it. After having, I think we finished second 3 years in a row, didn't we, to United before then? And to finally get the title back and do it at their ground and do it in a way, I don't think I was ever nervous during that game. Of course, it was a sort of game, but I always felt that we were going to go win it given the way we were playing at that time. So for me, it's the United game at Old Trafford in 2002.
I think that's a good choice, definitely on my list. I think I agree with you. I never, after about the first 15 minutes of nerves, you never really felt you're going to that we were going to lose it. And that I didn't go for it in the end. I went for the 4-2 against Liverpool in 2004, I think it was. Because there was some, you know, it was an honorary masterclass, but also we were really close to winning the title, you know, that year, and we were struggling a little bit in that game and turned it around, and it was just a glorious game, great fun.
I think, you know, in terms of great moments to win the title at Old Trafford, is, you know, they've never won the title at Arsenal, and I hope they never do. And, you know, we drew with them last season, and they won it at home, but I think this was so different. It was phenomenal. But I think as well, the kind of, in terms of, if you're lucky enough, like me, to go to some of the games, you know, you look at some of the moments where you were there, and in that Invincibles season, I was in the North End when Omri scored that goal against Liverpool in the game that's just been alluded to. And, you know, I mean, the place just went mad. It was just unbelievable. 3 days later against Leeds, and he scored 4. And, you know, Andy Gray had one of those moments, once in a decade moments, where his throat goes dry and all of that stuff. And that was phenomenal. And just that 49th game as well, where, you know, it was so mundane. It was 3-1 against Villa
October or November afternoon at 3 o'clock, but it was just so brilliant, and it was just, the team was perfect. It was just amazing, and I think in a way, in terms of top moment 2002, but in just terms of, there came a point when you did realise that the Invincibles were pretty special, basically. And I think that Villa game was it, and also that Omri goal against Liverpool.
There have been some amazing highs and some amazing victories. It's a bit perverse, really, but I've picked a game where we lose, partly because of personal experience. For me, Arsenal taking part in the Champions League final was an incredible thing. I absolutely loved everything about it until about 70 minutes. And even afterwards, the sort of depth... I mean, I was absolutely devastated with when Barcelona won. But still, the pride I felt in the performance and the pride in us participating at that level on the European stage, for those players and that manager to get there. The day itself, anyone who's a sort of forum member of Arsblog, you know, there was a great day like at the pub and in Paris, and I was out there
playing football.
Yeah, playing football in the street, hitting Alex Ferguson's car with a place shot. It was just a great day and a great occasion, and I was really proud of the club on that day, and so that's what I went for.
In terms of entertainment, there were two games that stood out for me, just in pure entertainment terms. There was that 5-4 game against Spurs at White Hart Lane, which was, I remember watching in the pub. I was living in Barcelona, and this Spurs fan, every time they scored, he was going, "That's it, we're back in it now, you're gonna..." And it was just incredible that every time they scored, we just went and scored another one. It was amazing. But another game that sticks out for me, and I think it epitomises the way that Arsene Wenger wants his teams to play football, was that Middlesbrough game at home, the 5-3 game, and it was like, oh my God, what's happening? And then all of a sudden, we just, I don't know what, it was like we'd been bitten in the arse and just clicked into gear, and the goals we scored, and it was just a festival. I can't describe it any better than that, like a festival of football. It was just pure out-and-out entertainment.
That Reyes goal in that game is brilliant, isn't it? It's one of those great sort of moments that it's a brilliant Martin Tyler piece of commentary where he sort of screeches Reyes' name into the microphone. But that was a remarkable game. I mean, there have been the high-scoring ones you remember. I mean, it's right at the end of the decade, but that 4-4 at Anfield last year was extremely entertaining as well, and the 5-4 that you mentioned, as in sort of Jose Mourinho would call them ice hockey matches or whatever, but to watch, unbelievable.
Any others?
I was just gonna say one other game I think is worth mentioning is 1-0 against Real Madrid at the Bernabeu. I think just for what it said, and you know, it was just awesome, great goal as well. So that's
coming of age of Fabregas, I think, as well, that night, because I remember traveling back to Barcelona and buying the newspaper the next morning and buying the Madrid newspapers, Marca and AS, and they were just unbelievably complimentary about Arsenal and Fabregas in particular. They were, you know, they were very aware of what a talent he is.
I suppose the San Siro goes in that bracket as well.
Against Inter.
True. Yeah.
One game which I think is a really important game, which often doesn't get noticed, but it wasn't a special game, it wasn't a brilliant game, but I think it was so crucial, was that the penultimate game at Highbury, and we're losing 1-0 to Tottenham with 8 minutes left or something. And Adebayo, in fairness to him, tackles their guy, maybe fouls him, I don't know, gets it to Henry. I mean, Henry just scores a wonderful goal. And I think if he hadn't come off the bench on that day and scored that goal, we would have probably lost to Tottenham that day. I think we wouldn't have got the Champions League spot. Mm. All those players who did leave that summer would have left anyway, I think. I think Henry may have left as well without Champions League football. We would have had a very young, callow, inexperienced team going into a new stadium without Champions League football, with Tottenham having Champions League football. And I think you suddenly look, and I think that was one of those moments where things could have turned out very, very, very differently. And we think the last 3.5 years haven't been brilliant, but you know, had that not happened, and we forget how near it was. I mean, you know, they were basically in the Champions League if we hadn't equalised that day. That was worth 3 points alone, that goal, two of them. two taken off them, one for us. And I think that was such a huge moment, that which I think is sometimes forgotten.
I just quickly as well would mention the final game at Highbury as well, which was another incredibly emotional affair, and just perfectly scripted. Henri scoring a hat-trick, falling to the ground and kissing the penalty spot at Highbury. I mean, you know, you couldn't write that, and that was a great day as well. Also, the whole lasagna thing was there, so it's worth mentioning.
All right. Goal of the decade, considering how many goals Arsenal have scored, it was a very, very difficult one. And I think it probably, for you guys, came down to just a personal choice or a goal that made you or the hairs on the back of your neck stand up, regardless of the importance of the game or the result or anything like that. I'll start with you, man, from East Lower. What have you picked?
Well, I went, in the end, I didn't go with the obvious one, which is Bergkamp against Newcastle, which was just a feat of magic. I actually decided to go with one of a game I actually attended, and goes back to what Gilberto Silva said here. It's my goal's actually going to be Campbell's against Barcelona in the Champions League final, just because I was there. You know, we went 1-0 up, and it was just a great experience. And so, there are millions of others you could have gone for. You know, there's Van Persie's against Charlton, Eduardo's against Burnley, some brilliant goals, but I went for Campbell's.
All right, good player.
I suppose Bergkamp is the crowning moment of an incredible career, in terms of that was the most classic Bergkamp moment of all the Bergkamp moments. That's up there. Henri's against Man U, because he'd actually not been playing very well, and you know, to do that in a game which was so incredibly tight, and it took a goal like that to win it, and I mean, it was incredible. But yeah, the goal I've gone for is probably a goal I've gone for because I get annoyed that no one else or few people recognise its brilliance. But it was actually August 2002, we're 2-0 down at Upton Park. I can't remember who it is. It might be Wiltord, someone, or Lowen plays the ball into Henri. He's got his back to goal 30 yards out, and he basically rolls the ball with one touch on his left foot, so that it basically loops the loop kind of backwards, and that does the man. And then he knees it down, and then he just hits it from 30 yards. And I mean, if you watch it again, and it is, the first touch is technically unbelievable, on a par with Bergkamp's at Newcastle. And the second and third touch, it is technically perfection. And we went on to equalise in that game. But at 2-0 down, we didn't have a prayer. And just watch it. It is technical perfection. And I know it's not the most important goal, but it's an incredibly underrated goal, I think. Mm.
And the one I went for, again, you know, there are goals that stand out, you know, some of Pires's goals. And I thought about Pires against Liverpool, that curling shot in the Invincible season. But it was another goal against Liverpool. It was at Anfield. It was the 2001-2002 season, and it was Freddie Ljungberg. We'd gone down to 10 men. I think it was Paul Durkin was the ref, and he sent off Giovanni van Bronckhorst. And Pires had the ball on our left-hand side. Gerrard was up against him. He shimmied one way, put the ball the other way, and out-sprinted Gerrard, got to the byline, pulled it back, and coming in, I mean, when you talk about seconds defining football matches, Freddie's run to arrive at that second to put it in the near post, and I think that made it 2-0 to Arsenal. I thought that was just, you know, a truly outstanding goal, and a goal that that said a lot about the team and their ability away from home at Anfield against a good Liverpool side. You know, with 10 men to go and put yourselves 2-0 up and really take the game to them and win that game, which went a long way, of course, to helping us win the title. I mean, there are better technical goals and there are better team goals, etc., etc. But for me, that's just one that sticks out or sticks in my mind as a truly brilliant Arsenal goal.
That's a great. Is that the game where Kanu played as a holding midfielder?
Yeah, after Van Bronckhorst was sent off, yeah.
Yeah, it was a remarkable team performance. Mm. I thought very carefully about two Patrick Vieira goals. One at Anfield, I don't know if you remember. I can't remember what year it was, but it was
2004-2005.
Yeah, it was a gorgeous team goal. Another one at home in the 7-0 to Everton, where the interplay between Vieira, Van Persie and Bergkamp was so brilliant, and the little clip finish so brilliant. I loved those goals where he used to play the 1-2s and go through from midfield. But I in the end, I've gone for a goal we've already talked about, which is Thierry Henry at home to Liverpool in the 4-2. The weaving run through the defender, Jamie Carragher falling on his arse like an idiot, which is
falling into Steven Gerrard, I think it was. I mean,
oh, Steven Gerrard. Well, even
they fell into each other. They were so petrified. I was watching, they fell into each other. It was amazing.
For that alone, I think it deserves going. But also, it was a pivotal point in towards the end of that season where it looked like we might lose the record. We might even, you know, be in danger of losing the league. And he stood up and was counted with an absolute wonder goal. It did make the hair stand up on the back of my neck, so I've gone for that.
All right. Any others that stand out? I mean, Pires against Villa is another one that sticks in my mind again in that 2002 season. And the ball over the top from Ljungberg, he chipped it over Boateng. And then I don't think Schmeichel was more than 3 or 4 feet off his line. And, you know, to lob a keeper like Schmeichel was outstanding.
And didn't he do his pre-shirt straight after? Did he do his knee in or something? Almost?
No, that was against Newcastle, I think. Yeah.
One goal I remember, which was just one of those reasons. It was early 2004, 2005, I think, watching Arsenal v Charlton. I was actually watching it in a pub that was showing it at 3 p.m. very naughty, on the big screen. They weren't playing the commentary, though. They had music playing, and people were kind of half interested. And then about 2 minutes after the break, there was a throw in that came into the box, and the cameraman focused in, and Henry had it with his back to goal, and then suddenly he was running away and celebrating, and then no one quite knew what on earth had gone on, and the cameraman had been totally flummoxed. And then they showed the replays, and it was that goal where he backheeled it basically across the Charlton goalkeeper, and literally every time they show the replay, you know, more people in the pub were turning around, because a lot of them weren't even watching the game, were turning around, and just, you know, all the noise was getting louder of just absolute incredulity. You know, this is just absolutely brilliant. And he's so quick that the cameraman couldn't even catch it.
All right.
Just finally, because my brother is a Chelsea fan, I've just got to give honourable mention to the Ray Parlour goal.
Whilst we're at it, Fabregas is 6 weeks ago against Spurs, the second one. That's got to be worth a mention too.
Oh yeah, yeah, for sure. I think the timing of that one as well is the main thing, because we've said it before, and I think we said, you know, everyone said it on their blogs, that you're still reacting to the first goal, and all of a second the second one is going in. You know, brilliant.
It was the same with that Reyes goal against Borough, wasn't it? That they just cut back to it, and he was smashing it in, I think, as far as I remember.
I think it was Bergkamp who'd scored just before him, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Brilliant. I was going to ask you for a defender and midfielder and striker of the decade, but I think they're a bit obvious, and, you know, it's going over old ground. So just to finish off, because we need to get to the end of this, a favourite memory from the last 10 years, it can be on pitch, off pitch, being at a game or something like that, anyone?
Shall I start? I can't remember who it was, and I'm sure we've all got collective amnesia who did it, but planting a blow-up trophy on the centre circle at White Hart Lane in 2004 was pretty clever.
I have to say that from a not on the pitch moment, but coming back from the Madrid game and being in Barcelona at the time, and I got back into Barcelona airport, and I was wearing my Arsenal shirt and an Arsenal scarf, and got off the plane and came out and got the bus to go into the city centre. And as I got onto the bus, I was going to pay my fare, and the bus driver, who was obviously a Barcelona fan, saw the Arsenal shirt and just gave me, like, come on, brilliant, like, well done. You know, it was fancy. He still charged me, of course, to go into the city centre. But for me, that was a real, I don't know, just a real football fan moment. I enjoyed that.
I'm going to go again for the unimaginatively. I'm going to go for the pre-game atmosphere at the Champions League final.
I think I hadn't really thought about this, but just something that makes me laugh now that I think about it. Just before that Man U game, where we won the title at Old Trafford in 2002, and I was at university at the time and living in a cold of a kitchen of 18 people, and I was so nervous. I think someone actually, in the end, three or four of my mates decided to take me out just to have a kick around, basically, because I was just such an impossible person to be around in the build-up to that game. And so I was there, they literally just took me out onto the grass outside and made a kick around to pass the time. And looking back at it, it was quite funny. And things were just unbelievable in those days. And I suppose as well, just looking in a similar vein, you know, not a huge moment, just being with a couple of mates in the
in one of the pubs around Highbury, May 2004, before the Leeds game. It was a nice warm evening. We were outside and we were just standing there having a drink. We'd beaten Liverpool. I think we all knew it was going to be okay. We were just standing there and go, and we were saying to each other, you know, it's never going to be this good. You know, we're going to sit here in 5 or 6 years and it's not going to be this good. There's no way it will be. So let's enjoy it now. And we are sitting here in 5 or 6 years and it's not as good yet. But and that was, you know, I think the great thing about that team was that I just about did manage to realise at the time how unique it was, and it was very special.
All right. Okay, well, gents, we better leave it there, and let's keep some fingers crossed that the first part of this new decade is as successful as the first part of the last one, or this current one that's just ending. Good player, thank you. All right, then, Gilberto Silva, thank you very much.
Sorry, I lost you. Sorry, I lost you there for a second.
I was just saying thank you very much for your contribution.
Thank you. Sorry, the line went dead.
That's all right. That was a brilliant silence. Gilberto Silva from GunnerBlog.com, thank you very much.
Thank you, and Happy New Year.
And to you, and the man from East Lower.
Yeah, no problem. Happy New Year again.
My thanks go to Good Player from GoodPlayer.com, the man from East Lower, that's eastlower.co.uk, and Gilberto Silva from GunnerBlog.com. I hope you found that interesting for the last Arscast of this decade, certainly the last Arscast of this year. Normal Arscasting, I assume, will resume next week, when we've got plenty to talk about and plenty to be going on with. Just before I go, though, and before I wish you a Happy New Year, I've got to give the winner of the competition of the previous Arscast, which was to win a Savile Rogue scarf, of course, with thanks to my friends at SavileRogue.com. I asked you which Arsenal player's name has a link to Christmas. A number of people sent in Emmanuel Eboué. Emmanuel, I suppose, has vague religious connotations, but the answer I was looking for was Nicholas Bentner. St. Nicholas Bentner. So there you go. Gareth Manning, well done to you. You've won the scarf. The random number generator picked your name out of the hat. So we'll get in touch and we'll get that scarf out to you as soon as possible. So for this particular Arscast, for this year, thank you very much. Thank you for listening. I'd like to wish you and yours a very happy, peaceful and prosperous 2010. All the very best, and the very best, of course, for the Arsenal. Come on, talk to you next year. Bye-bye.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.